Job chapter 13, please. And we're going to continue our study through the book of Job. And by the way, I do hope that you do enjoy this study. And please realize that a lot of biblical principle and wisdom come from the book of Job or are supported by these verses in the book of Job. I'm saying this because some may get a little bogged down by saying, oh, we're doing Job again and again and again and again and again. That may be the case as far as going through a book of the Bible, line by line, verse by verse, etc. But I hope you understand that this is not just one particular philosophy or idea that's being presented. There are several different things that you might even hear a pastor that isn't going verse by verse through the book of Job hit on these different topics throughout a year's worth of messages. And so don't focus on the fact that we're only in Job 13 and we've been doing this for a while. More so focus on the particular items and truths and philosophies and ideas that are brought forth to our attention each week. All right, so that's a little bit of a word of encouragement to keep on keeping on as far as hearing and listening about the book of Job. Okay, so if you'll stand, please, out of love and respect for the word of God. I'm going to continue reading through chapter 13 here. I'm going to start in verse 7, and we're going to read down through verse 16 or so. And as Job continues to talk to his friends about his circumstance and about these discourses. In verse 7, Job begins to ask some very difficult questions of his friends. He says, "Will ye speak wickedly for God? And talk deceitfully for him? Will ye accept his person? And will ye contend for God? It is good that he should search you. Is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, do ye so mock him? He will surely reprove you if ye do secretly accept persons. Shall not his excellency make you afraid, and his dread fall upon you? Your remembrances are like unto ashes, your bodies to bodies of clay. Hold your peace, let me alone, that I may speak, and let come on me what will. Wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth, and put my life in mine hand? Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. But I will maintain mine own ways before him. He also shall be my salvation, for an hypocrite shall not come before him." As he's listening to his friends and he's rebuttaling here, as the third friend has now spoken, we have three critical texts, if you will, as far as people saying that Job is a hypocrite, he's a liar, he's wicked, he's evil. There's no way that God would do this or even allow this if Job wasn't one of these things. And so, and then you have Job talking back to them and trying to reason out their hatred toward him and their just their attack on this poor man. And he says to them, I, as far as I know, I'm right with God. As far as I know, I'm walking before the Lord. And by the way, was he? Yes, he was. And so Job is saying, he's kind of getting tired of this, if you will. Or if you will, he's kind of gathering a little bit of strength and a little bit of sense. And he's starting to throw some punches back at his friends. And he says to them, he says, look. He says, look at verse 7, will ye speak wickedly for God? So he's saying, basically, are you going to think wicked of God or speak wickedly of him that God would do this and for, if you will, no reason or for all these things? So in other words, he's defending God's honor because his friends have basically accused God of some things as well. Not just Job, okay? And then he says to them, and talk deceitfully for him. So God, again, is being accused by the friends. And Job is saying, are you guys really willing to do this? Are you really willing to talk wickedly for God? Are you really willing to speak deceitfully for him? So what is being said here? Well, the friends are in contention that God is just in punishing Job because Job is wicked. And Job is a hypocrite. And Job is evil. Okay? And so that's what they're contending. That there's something wrong with Job. And Job is saying, look, are you going to say and that God is justly dealing with me and I'm wicked and I'm evil when that's not true? So that therefore that is a deceit. That is something deceitful. And God doesn't think that of me. And God doesn't think that of my circumstance and my situation. He says in that the friends are speaking wickedly. The friends are talking deceitfully for God or in the place of God. Look at verse 8. He says, will ye accept his person? Will ye contend for God? Okay, so he's again telling the friends that they are taking the place of God. They are putting themselves in the judgment seat and deciding these things in God's stead. Because, by the way, has God spoken to any one of these people involved in this circumstance? No. They don't know anything. These are all assumptions. And by the way, we've already talked about this vision that Eliphaz had, that it was more than likely a demonic vision. It was something that the devil put in there to make it seem as though there was a justification for this attack. And so we see here how these men are, if you will, putting themselves by their own reasoning in the place of God. And I want you to look at it from Job's perspective. Job is speaking these questions based on his view of his own righteousness. Okay? So he says, I am just before God. I am righteous before God. By the way, he was, okay, to the best of his knowledge. And so he's telling them, look, you are making this up. You are standing in the place of God. You are making, if you will, what God would normally do seem wicked, and what God would normally say and how he would act and judge be deceitful. He says, flipping the script, if you will. He says, you are basically, because I know my position before God, you are basically making God into something that he's not. And of course, God is who he is, and he's never going to change because God doesn't change. So look at verse 9. So after he asks these questions, he continues to ask questions, but now he kind of switches from defending God. He says, look, maybe you should think about defending yourselves. So Job is in, by the way, he's not really contending for himself at this moment. He's contending for God, that God is just, that God is righteous, that God is the same, that God in his person is to be trusted, is to be followed, is to be counted faithful. That's who God is. So then he switches gears in verse 9 and begins to ask them about their own lives. Now, we've read in the Bible what Jesus said in Matthew about the mote and the beam, right? And judging each other. And how all of that works. And by the way, or how it doesn't work, okay? And so we shouldn't be that way. So now Job is kind of turning this back on their heads by asking another question here in verse 9. He says, is it good that he should search you out? So guys, Eliphaz, Bildad, so far? What about you? Should God search you out? You are attacking me. And just because your lives are free of burdens and cares and judgment, does that mean you're perfect before God? Because according, by the way, that's why these previous questions are so important, verses 7 and 8. Because take Zophar, for instance, or Bildad, or Eliphaz, any of these guys. Just because, according to their philosophy, just because their children haven't been destroyed, and their flocks and herds and wealth haven't been taken away, and their health hasn't been tampered with, right? And their wives aren't upset with them and wanting them to curse God and die, right? And all these things, and their friends aren't at their houses attacking them, then that means that they're right before God. According to their own philosophy, right? Because God only, if you will, deals wickedly, or, not, no, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Not only does God deal harshly in judgment toward the wicked, okay, because God doesn't do anything wickedly, you understand that, okay, so it was I mixed up my sentence there. God is dealing, not only is God dealing harshly with the wicked, but then that means by their own estimation that God always deals well with the just. And so he's telling him, look, since none of this is going on at your house, should God search you out and see how your philosophy works there? Gentlemen, are you clean before God? Or maybe should some of these judgments be coming upon you? And so he says, look, he says, is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, do ye so mock him? So he's basically attacking their philosophy. That God only deals one way with the wicked and only deals one way with the just. And he says this philosophy is not who and what God is. And you are speaking wickedly for him, talking deceitfully for him. You're basically, he's saying, will you accept his person? Will you contend for God? He says, you're not. You're as one man that mocketh another. Do ye so mock him? And then in verse 10, he says, he will surely reprove you if ye do secretly accept persons. Now, what does the Bible teach us about the respecting of persons and that particular idea about our God? He is of no respecter of persons, right? And by the way, doesn't the Bible tell us it rains on the just and the unjust? Okay? Now, does God pass judgment upon the unjust? Yes. And does he pass judgment upon the just? He does. He's not playing favorites. And so we see here that his friends are being put to the test, if you will, by the words of Job. In verse 11, he says, shall not his excellency make you afraid and his dread fall upon you? And so he's basically bringing forth this principle that Jesus taught us in the New Testament, that they need to be careful what they say, lest the same things happen in their lives. Lest the same things come to pass in their circumstances. He tells them that their remembrances are like unto ashes, and it says your bodies your bodies to bodies of clay. And so he's telling them that you are finite. Your things are going to all pass away, but God is not. And the things of God are not. He says, hold your peace. Let me alone that I may speak, and come on me what will. And so he talks about the weakness of their arguments and how they are like clay. and they are like ashes. That these things are going to very easily be disposed of. Okay? And so he's going through some very difficult things, and he's reminding his friends that God is the one that's going to search us out. God is the one that's going to reprove. God knows what has been done in secret. And God knows all of these things, and he's the one that is the one that's strong. He's the one that's mighty. He's the one that is just and true and holy and pure and knows motives and knows thoughts and knows everything about us. And so Job says, basically, look, what you're doing to me is weak. What you're doing to me and how you are going against God even and if you will, putting words in God's mouth and putting judgment in God's hands, if you will, when it's not. He says, all of that is going to fail. It's all going to crumble or blow away or be forgotten because it's going to be worth nothing. And let me just tell you something. As we look through our lives and how we deal with other people, we need to be careful of the things that we say. The way that we treat people, the ideas and thoughts that we come up with about this person or that person, because we may be totally off base. And who are we to stand in the judgment seat of God and judge them? We're not, right? And so we've got to be careful about these things. Turn over to Romans chapter 3 real quick. Romans chapter 3, and yes, I know that's an improper use of grammar. It's just a common thing we say, right? Really quickly. Real quickly, yeah. Anyways, I try to abuse English as much as possible. Where was I going? Romans chapter 3. All right, verses 1 through 8. By the way, this battle of between English and math has been rekindled in me because I'm going through the class teaching children reading right now. And I am totally destroying the English language because phonics doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. If letters are supposed to sound a certain way, they should always sound a certain way, right? Except for all the rules that we have and then all the exceptions to the rules and such and so forth. And then there's sight words. You know what the definition of a sight word is? It's a word that breaks all the English rules. Because you can't pronounce it. Like, tehe. You know, the. Yeah, okay. Anyways, I'll get off that. All right, therefore, O thou art inexcusable, O English man. I added that. Whosoever thou art that judgest, for wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself, for thou that judgest dost the same things. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things. And thinkest thou this, O man, that judgest them which do such things, and doest the same, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? Or despisest thou the riches of his goodness and forbearance and longsuffering, not knowing that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance? But after thy hardness and impenitent heart, treasurest up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of thy righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. For there is no respect of persons with God. Okay, so Paul is giving, of course, the the church of that time, the idea, same ideas that Jesus taught in Matthew about judgment and rushing to judgment and taking the place of God. Just like Job is talking to his friends about here in Job chapter 13. So as we kind of close tonight and just think about these things, I want you to just think about some of these statements that are made about Job. As Job moves along here in this chapter, we're going to see that he makes a case to stand on his own merit without the opinions of his friends. That's okay, isn't it? You know, sometimes in our lives, we come to conclusions, and many may say that they're reasonable conclusions about a circumstance or a person, etc. But by the way, is that our place? It's not our place. And what happens when we get out of our place? Bad things. Okay? Because God is a God of order. He likes things done a certain way, in a certain place, etc. Let me illustrate with like the family, right? God says that in the family, the man is supposed to be the head of the home. Now, if the man is not the head of the home, that's a bad thing. Okay, bad things will happen. Now, there may be many different reasons why the man is not the man of the home, but none of that really, if you quote unquote, matters, because that's the way God designed it, that's how it's supposed to be, and when it's not that way, bad things happen. Does everybody understand what I'm talking about? So, God created man for a particular purpose to do a particular thing. God created woman for a particular purpose to do a particular thing. In as far as the husband and wife and children go, the husband's supposed to do certain things. The wife's supposed to do certain things. The children's supposed to do certain. And when those are all in order the way they're supposed to be, good things happen. And when they're out of order, for any reason, in any order, that's not the right order, bad things happen. It's just as simple as that. The same is true when we take the place of judgment for God. It could be said of us, if we do this, will ye speak wickedly for God and talk deceitfully for him? Will ye accept his person? Will ye contend for God? Is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, so do ye mock him. So the same things could be said of anyone who gets this judgment thing out of order. And so we need to make sure that as we live our lives, we should depend on God for his judgment in our lives. Not on others, and not on ourselves to others, but rather God overall. Okay, so God is the one that is supposed to be the judge. As we trust in God and stand before God and let others stand before God in judgment, that is the best way. Instead of making snap judgments on our own. Listen to what Job says as we close tonight. He says, wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in mine hand? He asks this question. And then he says, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. But I will maintain mine own ways before him. Okay, so he's, if you will, doubling down. I know that's not necessarily a good term to use in a church house. But he's just saying, look, I am sure of my own walk before God. And he says, I'm going to take this upon mine own self. And that phrase is really interesting there. He says, he basically asked them, why, gentlemen, why then am I putting my own flesh in my teeth? Why am I putting my own life in my own hand? He said, why would I do this except that I was just before God? He said, I'd be foolish if I wasn't. And he says, even if God decides to slay me. By the way, that's the only thing that hasn't happened yet, right? He said, I'm still going to trust that he's a good God and that I'm just before him, even if I die. And I just want you three to know that. Now, that's standing up for God, isn't it? And that's one who's speaking that's very sure of his situation before God. His confidence, and if you will, his bearing before his friends is not one of weakness, but one of strength. And so as we search out our own circumstances and our own experiences in our lives, we need to kind of ask some of these questions. Are we standing in the place of God in judgment? And if we are we willing to be judged ourselves? Are we willing to let God look in our own lives and judge us for the same things in the same fashion? But if not, are we one that is sure of our own circumstance? And are we willing, though God kill us, to maintain our own ways before God? You know, Job had a confidence. It was not an arrogance, but it was rather a confidence. He was sure of who he was before his God. And he's becoming more and more sure of that as he kind of, as I've mentioned before, as he kind of wakes up out of this sorrow, this extreme sorrow of this extreme circumstance. He's coming to his senses in many ways and understanding that this is a supernatural event. And that he does have the God that he has. And that he does have the testimony before that God that he has. And he's becoming more and more certain of that. And more vocal against his friends who are wrongfully judging him in the place of God. And we need to be careful how we ourselves deal with people in our lives that way.